Hi, I'm George Sumner. I was formerly the Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Dallas. I'd like to tell you about a new book that's just come out with Living Church Books, a collection of my own writings over those 10 years. The book is called In Season and Out, The Reflections of a Bishop in a Time of Churning. The churning comes from a Zulu word, mfakane, which refers to a season of tumultuous conflict in Southern Africa. Our own tumultuous season of politics, epidemic, migration, suffering, and innovation are what I take up in my book, which also seeks a stable place for more theologically traditional Episcopalians, considers the imperative of mission, asks who we as Anglicans are really anyway, and poses theological questions for their own sake. There are convention addresses, pastoral letters, blog entries, reflections, and even a section of a catechism in the book. I hope you'll discover in it some grist for the mill and some sustenance for the journey. You can find your copy of In Season and Out, Volume 6 of Living Church Books at livingchurch.org under Products and then Books. Or click the link in the show notes of the most recent episode of the podcast.
The blueprint of our leadership style should be from God's word. And obviously, especially, we need to develop a kingdom leadership style modeled after Jesus. And I think that's very, very important.
The Living Church, serving the Episcopal Church and the Anglican Communion since 1878. Welcome to the Living Church podcast. Welcome back, podcast listeners. Today, we're taking a trip with nary a carbon footprint. I love these trips that we take. Over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to be touching down in Kansas and then Japan, Africa, China, the Middle East for some global lessons in leadership. But before I go further, let me just give a little shout out for our most recent issue of the magazine, which is beautiful, our October Books and Education issue 2024. We unveil renovations at St. Paul's Cathedral Library, learn about the dissolving of a diocese in Nicaragua by the government, read the winning essay in our Student Essays in Christian Wisdom contest, and just so much more in independent church news, book and culture reviews, scripture study, theological articles. If your interest is piqued, I encourage you, go to livingchurch.org, click subscribe, get a copy of The Living Church in your hands. I'm technically getting paid to say this, but I actually believe there is no Episcopal or Anglican publication quite like The Living Church. Now back to our regularly scheduled intro. How are Christians formed as effective leaders? And how do they in turn form effective leaders? For those like the apostles who went out into other cultures, how can we learn leadership from beyond our home turf to serve like Jesus did in fearlessly contextualized ways? My guest today is Dr. Mary Ho. Mary is an expert in strategic leadership, and she is the international executive leader of All Nations International, which is a global Christian missions training and sending organization. She's the author of a number of articles that I'll link today in the show notes, including When Leaders Drink Tea Together, The Transcendent Culture of Servant Leadership, and Growing Global Women Leaders from the Majority World. Are there Western leadership models that really work to export elsewhere? Well, how and when? How do we lead with vision or even with a charismatic personality while building nurture on a staff rather than going toxic? What can Global North organizational leadership learn from Global South Christianity? And what are some benefits and limits to reading leadership books? Take off that leadership cap for just a second. Pastor, teacher, seminary student, sit back, relax, maybe have a cup of tea, and then you can get back to work. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Mary, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm delighted. I've never been on an Anglican podcast, so this is a first for me.
And I hope this is a gentle introduction to the wild, woolly world of Anglican podcasts for you.
Well, I wouldn't know the wild, woolly world. So far, my experience is very personal and warm coming from you.
Oh, good. And I know that you also have some Anglican students. You were just mm-hmm. telling me before we hit the record button that you've had some really good interactions with the Anglican Communion through some of your students that you work with at Gordon-Conwell. You also lead a global missions organization. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a bit about your story, Mary, and just briefly how you got to where you are?
Yeah, so I'm actually originally from Taiwan. I was born in Taiwan. I'm the daughter of a Taiwanese diplomat and ambassador. So I actually grew up in multiple countries, multiple continents, spent my childhood in Philippines, but my formative years, especially in Southern Africa, in the country of Eswatini, which used to be called Swaziland. I had my entire primary school education there. I learned my English in Swaziland. Oh. And then when I was about 12, we moved to New Zealand and then came to the U.S. at the age of 17 for college and was just really blessed to really encounter Jesus in a life transformative way. He just really pursued me and changed my life at 17. So that's a nutshell of my story after I got my master's degree from University of Michigan. I went back to Taiwan to work as a journalist and an editor, and I met my husband there. We got married, and then we actually moved to Hong Kong, where we served for several years. And in the year 2000, moved to Kansas City, the heart of America. And we've been here ever since.
What a journey. Thank you for sharing that. In your life, I would imagine that you have forged such close connections with other Christians and Christian leaders around the world. So I'm curious, in all of these connections and travels, what you've discovered and what you're still learning about various leadership models and strategies, how and where they work, where they don't. And particularly, as you know, I brought you on today to talk about what Western or global North leaders can learn from non-Western or global South models. Mm-hmm. So first, I'm curious what you appreciate, Mary, about global North or Western. I'll just use global North and Western interchangeably in this conversation. What you appreciate about a more Western leadership model? What's helpful about them, first of all?
I would say one thing I appreciate about the West is the extensive research done on leadership. And the many books and writings and publications about leadership that I think the rest of the world can take as a reference, but does not have to copy. And also in the West, we have developed different theories and models of leadership that I think we can offer others to think about. So one example would be, let's say, transformational leadership, often known as charismatic leadership. And it has been shown that this leadership model not only works well in America, in the West, so it's a very favored leadership style in the West, in the US, and Europe, but many of the characteristics of transformational leadership actually is embraced worldwide and is effective worldwide. And specifically, it's a great leadership style for women.
That is so interesting. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, Mary, is transformational leadership, when you described it briefly, I imagine the kind of leadership style, which is the person who has a big personality, or they lead with their personal energy and their personality and their charm, or they have a wonderful mm-hmm. speaking voice,
sure.
or they're a great influencer, natural influencer of people. And so wherever they go, they sort of stamp every place with their own personality in lots of ways, mm-hmm. which means that it's also easier maybe for them to carry out a particular vision, to meet goals.
Right.
Because they have a powerful personality and people like them. And, you know, most of us can imagine the dangers also of this kind of leadership. But Am I describing it correctly?
Yes and no. So transformational leadership is actually a specific leadership style. And if you Google it, there's just been decades of articles and books written on it. You're absolutely right. It has the ability to cast vision, the ability to motivate people behind that vision. And a great example is, let's say, Nehemiah, right? The wall was broken for many, many years. And he comes along and he says to the people, let's rebuild the wall. And then, you know, you have a whole nation following him, and they actually build it in what, less than 3 months. So charismatic or transformational leadership has the ability to cast vision, to motivate people towards that vision. It also has the ability to innovate solutions. And a fourth aspect of transformational leadership is actually what they call individual consideration, which is we don't lead people just en masse as if everyone's the same, but we lead our people as individuals, seeing them through God's eyes. What is God's plan for them? What are the God-given gifts that God has given them? What is the personality that God has hardwired into this person? What's the calling in this individual's life so that I, as a leader, can make sure this person doesn't just fulfill my dream, but that I, as a leader, help this person follow God's calling in his life? So transformational leadership is called transformational leadership because, first of all, transformational leaders transform the community or the environment around them. So it could be an organization, it could be their neighborhood, a school. So wherever God situates them, they transform that environment. The other thing about transformational leadership is that when you have followers behind you, they do not continue to be followers, but they themselves are transformed into a leader. So a transformational leader is always raising up other leaders so that they become leaders. And a transformational leader is also someone, as while we're leading, we ourselves are transformed. We allow God to transform us, to grow us, to mature us. And also we allow ourselves to learn from those we lead and other leaders. So we ourselves are also being transformed. I know that was a long answer.
Well, it was very helpful, Mary, because it took me from thinking initially that a transformational leader has to have a big personality and is probably going to leave a lot of bodies behind the bus. You know, it's like, here I am, here's my vision. And then like put it in fifth gear and go forward with the vision. And a lot of people will follow because they're charismatic. But then maybe there's going to be a lot of fallback or a lot of turnover because of an inattentiveness to discipleship needs along the way, or forming other leaders who can take leadership roles, and you're not just the person at the helm. So I'm getting, that was helpful to get a much better vision for a transformational leader, someone who comes in with a strong vision.
Yes.
But who's also emotionally intelligent.
Yes.
And has the ability to nurture
others
instead of becoming egocentric. So that's more the picture, I guess.
And also transformational leadership puts a high emphasis on integrity and also value-based leadership. So it's actually a great one for, I think, for Christian leaders, because transformational leadership also emphasizes integrity, character, and values. So I would say that that's one of the wonderful contributions that Western leadership models has to offer the global community. And each culture can then decide, okay, what part of it do we want? How do we adapt it to our own culture?
Now, Mary, what do you find in your research and your experience to be limiting or contextually ineffective about certain Western or global North approaches to leadership around the world?
So first of all, I think most books in the West that's been written about leadership, they're good books. But what we should not do in the West is say, aha, we have all the good books and theories about leadership. Now, all you non-Western world, please learn from us. And let's just get these books translated into all the languages of the world. It's good to translate books into other languages, but what you want is you also want a measure of contextualization. There are three approaches to leadership. One approach is more the universal approach, and the West does that a lot, which is, let's take transformational leadership or a certain leadership model, and let's make it universal. Let's apply it all over the world. That's a universal approach. Mm-hmm. The other approach is what we call the contingent approach, which is let's find out about the local culture, this country's culture. Let's find out, is it a high power distance culture? Is it a collectivistic or is it an individualistic culture? Is it a more masculine or feminine culture? And also, let's find out what kind of leadership has this country always had. So contingent approach is leadership is only successful contingent upon the local culture. And then the third approach is what we call normative approach, which is there are basic leadership competencies that we all need to be successful leaders across the world, such as, let's say, the ability to build team, you know. So I really think the sweet spot is a mixture of all three. But we do have to give serious attention to the contingent approach, which is leadership is only successful contingent upon the culture.
What's up, podcast listeners? Amber Noel here to invite you to a special deal on the Living Church's Fall Conference, Radiant Pages, Rediscovering the Bible. Right now, you can get 10% off your tickets with a special promo code TLCPOD10. We just want to thank you for being a listener to the podcast. Conference dates are September 24th to 26th, and in the lovely environs of All Souls Episcopal Church, Oklahoma City, we'll enjoy talks like Is the Old Testament Worth Reading? From Ellen Davis, and Lean into the Epistles of James and John with Wesley Hill. We'll tackle common questions about the Bible that you or your parishioners are surely asking, and even enjoy practical workshops on Bible reading for preachers and Lectio Divina. Ticket prices include all meals, including a final dinner together. Come meet new faces, greet old friends, and rediscover scripture with us. Go to livingchurch.org/events and use promo code TLCPOD10 for 10% off, or check out the link in the show notes of the most recent episode. For more than 80 years, the mission of St. Francis Ministries has been to provide healing and hope to children and families. Inspired by the past and rooted in faith, their vision is to see lives and systems transformed. But they can't do it alone. You can join them in their life-affirming ministry. St. Francis provides a wide array of services ranging from foster care and adoption to preventative and residential programs. Join their mission and help ensure children and youth receive the care they need to heal and rediscover hope. Join their mission and help families heal and regain wholeness. Join their mission and help heal the world one child at a time. They have lots of ways you can make a difference. You can explore them all at stfrancisministries.org/mission. That's St. Francis, S-A-I-N-T, francisministries.org/mission. Do you have a story or an example of a time when someone tried to take a leadership model and apply it somewhere, and because the context was wrong, it just really didn't work.
There's just so many examples. Asia and Africa, often decisions are, it's a collectivistic culture versus an individualistic culture. In the US, in many companies, you do 360 evaluations where you evaluate your peers or colleagues, and based on that, they may get a raise or a promotion. And that works really well in the West, but it utterly fails in cultures like Japan. In Japan, it's almost like, let's all get promoted together. And people will never speak bad about a colleague, and they themselves get a raise, but their colleague doesn't. Or there was a young missionary who came to my country in Taiwan and noticed that a lot of the singles in their 30s and 40s are still living with their parents. And this Western gal proceeded to convince all the Taiwanese single gals still living with their parents to move out and get an apartment of their own. Because, you know, here in America, if you're 40 living with your parents, most people don't do it. But in Asia, you're really part of your parents' family until you get married. So we do have to really go in, learn the culture, and adapt our styles to that culture.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, because even in just one country like the US or the UK or Canada, there is such diversity. You could almost apply these principles that you've been talking about to someone who goes from pastoring a parish in Florida to pastoring a parish in Kansas, or from Kansas to Maine, or, you know, different regions, different communities have such different ways of thinking, can have such different assumptions and rules and unspoken rules. And so different leadership styles could be effective even just in different regions in the same country. But that being said, if anyone who's listening is curious about what they might be missing by having been exposed mostly to Global North leadership models, I'd love to hear from you what you think that we can learn from the rest of the world. And I have a few different categories I'd like to ask you about. The first one is organizational leadership. So sort of like thinking structurally, whether it's a parish or a nonprofit or an initiative or maybe even a business, when thinking structurally, how to do an org chart, how to hire, things like that. What have you seen in this area from other Christians in Global South nations or from indigenous Christians in the Global North that most Global Northern Christians may not have thought of seriously?
Okay, I would say a huge one is most of non-Western leadership is very, very relationally based. So I have a good friend who is chairman of the board of a large global mission organization. And he was trying to put together an international board of leaders from around the world. And one of the Asian leaders said to him, how can we lead if we don't drink tea together and if we don't know each other's children's names? And that is a huge difference between Western and non-Western leadership, which is in most parts of the world, you drink tea together and get to know each other, really build genuine relationship, and you get to know each other's families, wife, husband, children. And so when I travel and visit our leaders around the world, I always try to stay in their homes so that I do know their children by name. I know where they live. I know their spouses. And we end up having meals together, drink tea and coffee together. I would say that's a big one, is to build relationally trust relationship. And yeah, a lot of decisions are made that way instead of in a conference room.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't underestimate the power of a local coffee shop or
that's right.
scheduling regular dinners with parishioners. And then for Americans, you know, remembering the names of their children. Also, for some of us crazy Americans, I mean, we're very touched when you remember the names of our cats and dogs also.
Oh, that's right. Because
for some of us, they're almost like our children. That's, for some of us, I won't name names, but yeah, just that, that is so powerful, building relationships and just taking the time and how slow that is, Mary. That just strikes me as very, in a sense, non-productive time.
Yes, it is slow. It is messy. I'm actually more task-oriented, so I have to slow myself down and really get to know people. But I have talked to so many global leaders around the world. I was just on a panel for Lausanne on non-Western leadership, and everyone says that, you know, we need to take time to drink tea together. Another story I tell, it's not my story, it's Todd Johnson's story, and I co-lead with him at Gordon Conwell, our cohort. But he was at a key mission conference, okay, a few years ago, a significant mission conference. And at that time, already something like 40-50% of the Christians in the world are in the continent of Africa. But there was only like 3 or 4 African leaders present. And he was sitting next to an African leader. And the guy who was leading up there was a Westerner. And the Westerner who's leading said, I want you all from the global South and from Africa to know that you have a seat at the table. And this African leader leans over to Todd and says, you know, it's very good that we're invited to the table, but it will be far better if we're invited to the kitchen. And I think this is very key for us, which is often is the Westerners that already set the agenda, already planned the menu, and the table's already set. And then we say, hey, you're invited to the table. But non-Western leaders don't want to be just invited to the table. They want to be invited to the kitchen, where they get to pick, what spices do we use? Oh, we're going to use some non-Western spices. And it's going to be very, very messy. And together we actually decide what dishes are we going to concoct? You know, what fusion dishes are we going to produce instead of the menus are set and non-Western leaders just choose from the menus? So, yeah.
And if the Westerners then have to take a little Pepcid before sampling the menu, they will be just fine. To those who are used to setting the table, you know, to have to be the ones to say, I'm not used to this or I feel uncomfortable can be a really, really useful exercise. And even as you're talking, Mary, again, I'm thinking too of cultural differences, even just in the US. I mean, if there's somebody listening who is pastoring or interested in pastoring or planting a church which is ethnic or multiracial, this is a really great picture for Anglicans. We love to talk about setting the table in terms of the Eucharist and the liturgy. But yeah, who's in the kitchen is just a great, that's a beautiful image. Are we willing to have real sharing in decision-making from the ground up?
What's really important when we talk about Western versus non-Western leadership or just leadership in general is after 4 years of getting a doctorate in leadership, I am just convinced that the blueprint for leadership is really the Bible. So for me, it's not even a matter of, is this a Western paradigm? Is this a non-Western paradigm? We all have to be culturally sensitive, but the blueprint of our leadership style should be from God's word, and obviously, especially how Jesus leads. We need to develop a kingdom leadership style modeled after Jesus. And I think that's very, very important.
I'm wondering about Jesus as rabbi, Jesus, mm-hmm. Jesus as a pastor. You know, mm-hmm. we're watching him in the scripture teach us in the same moments that he's teaching his disciples 2,000 years ago. Is there anything that you're learning about the art of discipling, of guiding a flock, that maybe in non-Western contexts, people sort of get these leadership aspects of Jesus more quickly?
Yeah, so leadership is not a program. Leadership is really life on life discipleship. That's how Paul, right, raised Timothy to be a leader. Mm-hmm. That's what Jesus did when he recruited his disciples. He says, come and see, you know, come and see where I'm living. He had them travel with him, eat with him, right, discuss with him, just life on life. Again, it's relational. There has been research done on how leaders are made globally. And the number one factor is actually challenging assignments. Like when we're given a challenging assignment, you know, it could be a promotion, a new job, a new project. The second biggest factor is a mentoring relationship, or what we call developmental relationship. It could be having a mentor, a discipler, a coach, a peer coaching. And then the third one is adversity. But leaders grow the fastest when they have these first two conditions. That means when they're given a challenging assignment and someone mentors them or coaches them alongside. And in this research, yeah. the smallest factor in grooming leaders effectively is to take a class or to read a book. Okay, so don't do what I
it's
did.
So interesting.
Yeah, don't do what I did, which is read books for 4 years on leadership. But you see, in the West, we think, oh, I want to grow as a leader. I am going to take a class on leadership. I am going to go and read a book on leadership. Which book do you recommend? And it's all very good. But the greatest ways we can produce leaders is to give them appropriate challenging assignment and provide the mentoring, coaching, the life-on-life discipleship that they need.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Do you think, Mary, that the way Jesus went about this ministry with his disciples, when you compare like Global South and Global North leadership models, or the ways, not just even models, but just the ways people do it on the ground, mm-hmm. are there aspects of Jesus' leadership that you see Global North leaders resisting a little more, or just not seeing as much?
I think it goes back to what I said, which is the core of leadership development has to be life-on-life discipleship, life-on-life mentoring, life-on-life coaching. If you look at Jesus, even though he fed the multitudes, he only concentrated on raising up 12 disciples. He invested 3 years into discipling 12 men. But if you read by Acts chapter 2, right, it says 3,000 were added to their numbers that day. And if you read further, thousands were added. So Jesus focused on the few people, the few leaders who would then lead thousands. And I think that's good for us to remind ourselves in the West that, first of all, to mentor and disciple leaders, and it doesn't have to be many, but to focus on the few who would lead the thousands.
My final question for you today is about mission and what the Global North can learn from and pay attention to in mission today. So the organization that you lead, All Nations, your mission statement says, that you aspire to see disciple-making movements in every people group of the world. Mm-hmm. In the Episcopal Church and Anglican world, as I'm sure you know, most Anglicans around the world are there because of missionary movements, mm-hmm. many of which were connected to empire. So there's a lot of concern about our hand in importing and continuing harmful colonial influenced relationships as we're sharing the gospel. And that could be international missions. It could also be worried about imbalance of power as we're sharing the gospel in our own communities. Is there any wisdom that you can share with us from what you've learned about global leadership that could help global Northerners who are sometimes even just extremely self-conscious about wanting to not be abusing power, not have colonial type relationships mm-hmm. with the people that we're ministering among? Do you have some wisdom that you could share here?
As an Asian, I just want to say, yes, there's been many mistakes made in the colonial era with missions, and that is very well documented, so I'm not going to go into that. But I think we should not throw out the baby with the bathwater, which is that there were many wonderful things that were done, you know, like everywhere where Western missionaries went, they established schools. They started hospitals and clinics. They brought about literacy. Almost everywhere that missionaries go, they improve the life of women, you know, and provided girls and women with opportunities to read and write. So I just want to say that because I come from a country where the first school that was started by the first Protestant missionary is now producing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students a year. The very first little clinic started by the first missionary is now a wonderful, huge, thriving hospital that is still serving the people. The missionaries brought a written language that we didn't have in our dialect. You know, translated the first Bible that is still being used by the Presbyterian Church, brought literacy to a lot of women. So a lot of good things have been done. And I just want to acknowledge that and thank the many Western missionaries who laid down their life. Many of them died on the mission field. Many of them never returned to their home country. And they went and served the people. Now, right now, 67% of the global church is in the global south. And the U.S. is still the world's largest sender of foreign missionaries, but then it's followed by Brazil, Korea, Nigeria, and China. I think that we have experience and expertise to offer the global south because the West have been sending missionaries for longer. We've made more mistakes that we've learned from. But one thing we want to be careful about is to not export Western models of mission to the global South. We want to make sure we don't export American structure into the global South. It just doesn't work. Let's just take China, for example. America's a open access country that's sending workers to the nations. China is a closed access country that's sending workers to the nations. They cannot openly mobilize workers or finances or openly train workers and send them. So it has to be a different structure. A lot of African countries, in the culture, they don't really raise support like the way Western missionaries do. And also in the West, Europe and America, they're financially strong. But in Africa, it looks different. So African sending will look different. So in the West, we want to partner with different nations to support them in they themselves coming up with a viable, innovative missions model, both in training, sending, and also financing. Does that make sense? It's just like leadership. We don't want to export Western leadership, Western mission structure, but to be supportive of these countries developing their own solutions.
Yeah. And just as a side note, I'm also very glad, Mary, that you mentioned a little bit about women and the role of women and women being empowered. Because before we hit record on the call, you were talking about the importance seems like so small a word, but the how women carry the church and carry church movements, church planting movements, mm-hmm. and revivals, mm-hmm. lay women mm-hmm. largely around the world, particularly in the global South. So not underestimating the role of women's empowerment in international relationships, mm-hmm. but maybe perhaps also locally, not underestimating women who maybe wouldn't normally step forward, or maybe young people who wouldn't normally step forward, people who might not normally step forward, not underestimating them in your calculations about who to mentor or who to give ministry opportunities to. I found that very encouraging, what you told me about women's leadership around the world.
Good.
Well, I've been speaking today with Dr. Mary Ho. Mary, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Absolutely. It's been a delight. I'm sure there's much more to talk about.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Living Church Podcast, a ministry of the Living Church. If you're interested in becoming a subscriber to the Living Church magazine, check us out, livingchurch.org, click subscribe. You'll have access to the year's whole archive right away and can look forward to your next issue in the mail. In 2 weeks, come right on back, we welcome the Bishop of Puerto Rico, the Right Reverend Rafael Morales Maldonado, to talk about how churches on the island are responding to climate change and finding creative ministry in their communities. Until then, our producer is Leslie Thompson. I'm Amber Noel, your host, and it's been good to be with you. Peace.